Cool.
Let me take a breath.
Deep breath. Episode 50. Okay. Coming your way.
Episode 50.
Don't fart.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 50, recorded live Wednesday, January 16th, 2013. I am Joel Duggan of StarCrossedOnline.com, and as we mentioned last week, both Peyton and Chad are traveling. Filling in, I'm happy to be joined by Mr. Bill Meeks of Mixed Media and greetings from Storybook, the podcast. Bill, how are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you doing, Joel?
I'm awesome. I've had a good day. I have some travel myself coming tomorrow, some new contract ventures that I'm excited about. And yeah, that's it. It's been a very simple day. I don't often get those.
I wish I could say I had the same. No, it was a very complicated day. My boss at work, I'm making a video for his boss, and he wants to see all the video clips before they pass on to his boss. And his boss told me to do one thing. He's telling me to do another. Big frustrating. I should just let it go, leave the muddy boots at the door, and enjoy being on here with you guys.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Oh, man, micromanagement. I can't stand it. One thing I've always said as an entrepreneur is that whenever I find somebody that can do the job better than me, I will just hire them and let them do it. One less thing I have to worry about, and I remember what it's like to be micromanaged, and it drives you crazy. The other chuckle you might hear in the background is the butt that is keeping Chad's chair warm, the third chair warm this week, and that is Mr. Johnny Feisty from the TV Copilot podcast, and the composer of my very own song, which I got for Christmas. So, Johnny, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Joel. It's pretty cool to be here. I'm glad you invited me.
Hey, no problem, sir. It was a pleasure to meet you back in Nerdtacular, you know, in Utah in June, and I've been looking for an excuse to be on a podcast with you, and now we have one. And I guess I have to kind of clear a question that I always have when people have pseudonyms and nicknames. Do you want to go by Johnny, or do you want us to call you Jim?
Probably stick with Johnny. I guess it gets less confusing for people.
Less confusing. Okay, that's fine. We had a guy on from a local podcast here a little while ago. And it was Pig something.
Oh,
Pig Monkey. Pig Monkey was his nickname, and that's what he wanted to be called on the show.
Well, why wouldn't you?
I don't know. I agree.
You can call me Pig Monkey.
It's cool.
I guess.
Well, I think the real Pig Monkey might, you know, stand up and cause a fuss.
What about Monkey Pig?
Monkey Pig. Yeah, we could do that. Ninja Monkey Pig is where I would go, but that's just me. But I had a hard time. I had to remember because his real name is Andrew, and I had met him as Andrew. And then he wanted online to be called Pig Monkey. And I was just like, yeah, okay. And I really had to work at it. So I wanted to get that out of the way, you know, right up front whether I should call you Johnny or Jim. But I shall call you Johnny or Mr. Feisty, one of the two.
Yeah, either of those will suffice.
Awesome. Awesome. Awesome.
So, can I call you JF?
I guess I might not respond.
Okay.
Nice. For anybody out there that is new to the Citadel Cafe, this is where myself and a couple of friends come to hang out and talk about the things that we've been into lately. We gravitate towards geeky, sci-fi, fantasy, entertainment. We're not myopic. We will tell you about anything that we think is cool. And if we think it sucks rocks, we will also let you know. So I guess the first thing I want to do is, of course, we've already kind of done a quick introduction of our guests. But Bill, why don't you fill in the Citadel Cafe listeners a little bit about, you know, who you are, what you do, your podcast, just all of the above.
It was a dark and stormy night in Houston, Texas, January 1st, 1980. No, I'm kidding. Mainly I make videos. You've probably seen, if you follow internet video at all, you've probably seen them somewhere. I have a lot of videos that have been on the Twit Network, like the Android Arena bumper and the Big Story bumpers, for example. I did a lot of stuff for NSFW show. Geek and Sundry, the Sword and Laser show. I did the intro and all the animations for that. And I also shot 3 episodes of Scam School in Indonesia. But yeah, basically a video producer. I was a freelancer for, you know, 5 years or so. And I just recently took a job with a big telecommunications company that I won't name but basically making training videos so I can get the budget and the free time to do fun stuff like, I don't know, dancing hamsters or something.
Nice. Very cool. And I'm a Sword and Laser fan, so I've seen your work.
Yeah, Bill's videos are awesome.
Nice. I did go to Mixed Media, MeeksMixedMedia.com for precious little moments before the show because I was out running errands and I hadn't really had much time. I borrowed my dad's car today to do a bunch of things, and I can't look at the phone and drive, obviously. So I was like, hey, cool, I get this day. And I was like, I'm going to be offline all day. This is going to be difficult to prep for the show. So I have some homework to do after. To go check out some videos. So yeah, very cool. And what about your podcast?
Oh, podcast. It's called Greetings from Storybrooke. I host it with my wife Anne Marie, and we basically talk about Once Upon a Time on ABC every week.
Oh, nice. I think I've talked to you about that before on Twitter.
Yeah. You asked me what I thought about this show, which obviously I'm running the podcast. I kind of like it.
You kind of like the show. Yeah. Not biased at all.
Yeah.
It's funny, I've been toying around with the idea, if we ever eventually have time, for Jocelyn and I to do a podcast of some sort together. We're not married, but we live together. We're very much a couple, and we have so many similar interests, and we have so many strong opinions about those, you know, those geeky interests that I think it would be a very interesting show. But she already does two shows a week, I do two shows a week, and we're just like, I don't know if we have time for a third, whether or not we should do a third together. So it's always been bouncing around, but we haven't really kind of quite come down on it. We guessed, I was trying to have her actually on in the last week, but she wasn't able to come on the show on TCC, and I have filled in for her a couple times on The Gamers Inn, but we haven't really kind of found that moment where I get to fill in for Ryan on The Gamers Inn yet, or she gets to fill in for one of the other guys that's not here. So, but hopefully someday we'll be able to podcast together. It's kind of funny that we podcast so much, but yet never the twain shall meet.
Well, it is pretty, it can be challenging podcasting with your spouse. Like actually on the show, we really don't talk about the fact that we're married very much. Because if we get into an argument about the show, I don't want people hearing marriage fight.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so and I mean there's been like one or two moments where stuff got real. but we you know reversed out of it and edited out the awkward side. So it was okay.
Yeah. No, I who was it? It's Len Peralta and his wife have been doing one for quite some time together. And I don't listen to it religiously, but I've touched base with it a couple times and it's quite enjoyable. It you can tell that they have a very funny kind of poke one another in the arm relationship, which is kind of it's a neat window into people's personal lives, and I think a brave move of anybody, whether you make it known or not known, you know, on the show that you guys are married, that it's something fun to do together. So, and Johnny, you also have a podcast.
This is true. Yeah. I have a podcast called TV Copilot. It is ostensibly a show about television shows, but it's I think I've started calling it a show about a podcast about TV shows because it's me talking to myself mostly, you know, to spill the beans, I guess. I do a lot of, I guess, what I would call characters and have sort of a full scripted show that is sort of a review of shows I like. I try to cover things I like, even if I don't actually cover them. But yeah, I'm about a half a year into it now, I believe. I think we just did 27. So
cool. I did have time to check out the TV Copilot, and I was, I want to say, happily surprised because I was expecting to have a review show of TV and stuff, and kind of think like, well, this is going to be very similar to.
Yeah.
To the Citadel Cafe, and I'll listen, and I'm sure I'll have Johnny on at some point, and I should probably, you know, try to figure out where we might cross paths. I don't want to cover things that you've already covered. And then I was pleasantly surprised to find out that it really, I was like, when is he going to talk about the topic? Right now, he's just arguing with these two little characters that are really pissing him off right now. And it was really, I don't want to say intense, but it was very engaging. And I had not, the closest thing that I had listened to in that nature as far as a scripted show is the FSL network that Tom and Brian, was it Brian Brushwood? Brian and
no, it's Justin.
Justin. Yeah. Do on, I think it's on Frog Pants.
Yeah.
And I really like that show as well. And I haven't done, I mean, I started doing scripted stuff, but I quickly moved to live kind of fly by the seat of your pants stuff because it involves so little editing. It's a lot easier to get, you know, production stuff out to people. But when I first started podcasting, I was doing very scripted, edited stuff for StarCast. Back when they first started, I was doing unit review, little video, or not videos, but little audio clips for them that were like a minute, 2 minute long. Probably similar to what you do, Johnny, for The Instance.
Yeah. Pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, because you do Hunter Talk, right?
Yeah, I've been doing that for, I guess, that's been about a year and a half now, too.
So yeah.
Do segments for random Warcraft podcasts, mostly.
Oh, cool. So you've got other segments on other shows, too?
I've done a few, sort of like three or four off segments that kind of fizzled out. Hunter Talk's the only one that's really stayed around. I did one for the Star Wars instance as well, but as people may be aware, the Star Wars MMO kind of faded out and all that stuff went away as well. But
what was it called? It was a droid thing, wasn't it?
No, that was there's another guy who did a droid one. I had a Bounty Hunter Talk.
Oh, Bounty Hunter Talk, right?
Right. It was supposed to be a serious alternative to the Instance Hunter Talk, but people complained when I tried to give real advice, so it went back to just being another kind of silly thing.
Right on. Well, very cool. And something that I want to ask both of you. I know, Johnny, you were there. I only just kind of caught wind of it this year because I'm a continent away and have not been able to attend anything like this before. But New Media Expo just kind of went by with CES earlier in the month. And I heard murmurs of podcast awards. I know Scott and Brian were there from Frog Pants. And I was wondering, Johnny, I know you went. Bill, did you go?
I did not go. I caught some of the live streaming, like Leo Laporte's keynote and things like that.
Right.
But I didn't get to go.
Yeah. Have you been before?
I have not.
Okay. Well, I guess the spotlight is on you, Johnny.
Sure.
So what is New Media Expo? Like, I mean, is it something really cool? Is it something that is old hat or is it brand new? I mean, I'm a noob, so fill me in.
Well, it, as best as I understand, I mean, it came out of the Blog World, whatever convention expo. I think it was just called Blog World. Which originally, I believe, was a fairly small thing, maybe 6 years ago. I hate to give dates because I'm sure, most assuredly wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But they've kind of folded in podcasting and what everybody there seemed to be just referring to as vlogging and video casts and, you know, now sort of more professional audio and video online stuff. And it's, I guess, an effort to sort of bring people together. If anybody, I should have found the link to this. If anybody can go track down Leo Laporte's keynote from New Media Expo, it really nails kind of the gist of new media, which is basically anything that people are self-creating to some extent, kind of like indie bands, if you know you're into music at all, apart from large broadcast networks or large conglomerates. It is a really strange beast because there are people from pretty seriously different backgrounds. I had a lot of conversations with people about, you have a lot of creative people, content creators who are writers, musicians, actors, you know, directors, video people, a lot of production. You have a lot of people there who are looking at the, I keep calling it a gold rush. I don't know if it's a good term for it, but a lot of people are looking at this like, how do I make money?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of, and because we're in Vegas, you're close to LA, and there are a lot of people, you know, kind of trying to figure out how can I leverage this into cash. One of the big things is monetize, and so you hear the word monetize all the time, and it's a little bit strange. One of my big things now, like having done things in creative fields for a long time, is that, you know, I like to focus on finding a way to do things that you love and that you have a passion for. You know, it's kind of cliched, but, you know, finding things that you really enjoy doing. And a lot of New Media Expo is trying to mash together people who like to make things with people who some want to, you know, kind of partner up and who have a, more of a business sense or come from maybe a traditional production background, whether it's print or video or audio. And then you do also have some people that are just kind of like chasing a dollar. So yeah. That aside, the somewhat cynical take on it, but it is pretty exciting because you have people coming from all sort of walks of life who are still a little bit ahead of the curve. I mean, granted, it's podcasting has grown and video, you know, with the advent of Geek and Sundry and Nerdist and a lot of the YouTube stuff that's going on that YouTube is sort of curating right now. And what Twit has done over the last couple of years, you know, there's a lot of what seems like to people who follow podcasting, you know, it's kind of broken big for longtime podcast fans, but it's still just before kind of a big hump in widespread acceptance. So far as like being able to get, you know, podcasts into everybody's home or cars and that kind of stuff. So it's really fun to be around people who are just trying to make anything they can think of that kind of just speaks to themselves and whatever kind of little niche that they can find. And that was kind of I got to geek out a little bit because I kept running into people that I knew from just following on Twitter or, you know, having seen on YouTube. And you're kind of in the mix with everybody, so you can just grab somebody, you know, gently, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe not grab them, but, you know, you can approach anybody and just kind of shoot the breeze and, you know, see how things work in whatever other people are doing. And, you know, you talk to somebody who's got 10 million hits on their YouTube channel, and it's pretty crazy, you know, to realize that a lot of these people are just doing what you're doing, but they're, you know, they've been doing that one particular thing for a few years, and now they're, you know, in some sense, a celebrity. It's hard to quantify.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I just had this conversation in the car with my dad today because I was talking about, you know, playing World of Warcraft with friends, and in some cases, friends who used to be, and in some cases still are fans, but are people we're getting to know. And also myself having the flip-flop experience of going to Nerdtacular and meeting people that I've been following and listening to online almost every day for 2 years.
Yeah.
And there's always that initial kind of like, oh, geez, like this is going to be, you know, you get the butterflies in your stomach and you're nervous about meeting new people, et cetera. But then you spend 3 minutes with them over a beer and you're just like, holy crap, everybody is so approachable. And yeah. you kind of know that from listening to how casual they are, especially in a situation where, like Twit, you say, you know, where you can tune into Twit Live and you can see what they're like when they're not like on the show, when the cameras aren't recording everything and they're just kind of interacting with the chat room or interacting with each other. You get to kind of see what everybody is really like. And that is missing from the traditional sense of Hollywood that we all kind of grew up with, where, I mean, like you run into Harrison Ford on the street corner, you don't necessarily feel like you can talk to him. You know, like there's a certain level of separation there, you know, whether or not he would mind or not, I have no idea. You know, but then you have something else like, I don't know, I'll say like Will Wheaton or Felicia Day or somebody. They probably wouldn't mind if you said, hey, you know, like, see, I love your YouTube show or whatever. They would be like, oh, cool, thanks. You know, I don't know whether, I feel like they'd be more likely to actually have a conversation with you because they're not these super celebrities that Hollywood kind of has in their orbits, you know?
Sure. And there's definitely an aspect of people being engaged more, you know, like who people like Will Wheaton, who, you know, do have like 500 million followers on Twitter or whatever, but you know, who directly involves himself like with people who are fans of his work for like his whole entire body of work. So,
yeah. And everybody I would imagine that's part of the New Media Expo understands the value of the community and interacting with the community and knows that you can't just, you know, be the face at the end of the camera. You actually have to talk to people and, mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. Bill, you were going to say?
Yeah. Oh, I was just going to say, you know, a lot of these people, like, you know, your Felicia Days, your Tom Merritt, your Veronica Beaumonts, they're excited to be recognized, where, you know, someone like a Sean Connery or Arnold Schwarzenegger might just be bothered with you approaching them at a grocery store. If you approach Tom or Veronica or Brian Brushwood at a grocery store, they'd be thrilled.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just a kind of a different perspective, I guess.
Yeah, I have to say to anybody, if you ever get a chance to meet Tom and Veronica, they are, I met them at Nerdtacular, you know, I was at the same one with Joel, and they are the nicest people, you know,
definitely.
For how present they are in a lot of different media outlets online, you know, those are definitely two people that you should never hesitate to go say hello to, I would think.
Yeah, I'd say the same as Scott Johnson, too.
See, I haven't got to meet Scott yet. I think I've hit about all the big internet podcast celebrities except for Scott. I've hung out with Brian Ibbett even a couple times, but not Scott.
Yeah, well, I think I've probably spent more time with Brian Ibbett than I have Scott. When we were in Nerdtacular, the following day, when everything was kind of over, there was a lot of people still kind of hanging out in the hotel the next day. People were going to see the movie. Flights were going out on Monday, you know, late Sunday evening, and everybody was playing Words Against Humanity in the lobby of the hotel. And I'm sitting next, Joss and I were sitting next to Brian and his wife, I think at some point, and talk about a way to get to know somebody, you know, yeah. Playing a very risky game, was quite fun because you see the pause and you see the, oh God, I'm going to say this in front of a bunch of people that I barely know, you know, it was a really fun time. Cool. Well, New Media Expo sounds it sounds a lot like, I guess I want to say Nerdtacular. I mean, that's, I keep on bringing that up because that's their only real kind of media convention that I've gone to. I did HalCon here, which is mainly a comic and sci-fi convention here in Halifax, but there's some media and stuff going on there too. Was there anything that stuck out this year, Johnny, about New Media? I mean, besides Leo's keynote, was there something like a favorite moment or a favorite part?
Well, you know, the best part for me, I'll just say briefly the worst part, because I kind of mentioned the money people, is you run into people who immediately get into sort of like a marketing shtick. Mm-hmm. And that's something that just kind of gives me hives, and realizing that those people are paying attention to what's going on online, which is kind of exciting to kind of frame it a little bit differently. But to keep talking to people who are looking for a way to find talent is really strange and weird, but kind of neat. And then to kind of put that more in just all the way positive thing, what was really exciting to me was kind of getting to talk to people about who are maybe working on something completely, because I work on kind of a weird podcast at this point. Like, I'm doing an almost entirely scripted, you know, like 20-minute podcast once a week. And talking to somebody who's doing like a YouTube sort of mommy blogging video, who, you know, that's their job, and meeting people who are doing something from such a strange thing to me, but that it's their, that's their thing that they're doing, yeah, as kind of like how they supplement their life, sort of financially, and doing things sort of as a professional. And that, it was kind of interesting to see that side of the curtain.
Yeah.
I guess.
I'm wondering if, I mean, I can maybe draw a parallel. I mean, when I look out and see like the world of webcomics, which is something that I'm very late to. I mean, webcomics have been around for quite some time, and my comic Starcross has only been out there once a week for like maybe 3 years. And then I see other folks that have been around for, I don't know, 5 years or so. But they essentially are drawing stickman comics.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that they're, you know, vacationing in the Cayman Islands, but I mean, these guys are paying their rent and doing all these things by well-written, you know, I'm not knocking any kind of, you know, creative, effort here, but it's just a different thing, and it's a different audience, and it's a different process. I don't want to say it doesn't anger me, but it does kind of frustrate me to the point like, well, if I'm taking 8 hours a week to draw my comic strip, just like you're taking 20, you know, I don't know how long it takes you to do a 20-minute scripted podcast, but like you're putting all this effort in, I mean, you're doing it for your own reasons. You're doing it for your own audience, which is a niche audience, I'd imagine. And, you know, you kind of have to figure out what spaghetti is going to stick to the wall. And for me, I found that my comic is, now that I have a book, it's evening out a little bit, but for the first 3 years, my comic was just nothing but, in a business sense, a loss leader. It was just a way to get people to get to the site. And then they might pick up an avatar or commission me to draw them something for their wife or husband or whatever. But do you find, it a little bit frustrating when you're talking to somebody who's, I mean, not to knock mothers and all the work that goes into motherhood, but like if they're doing a mommy blog, and that's basically paying, like if that's their full-time job, you know, and it's a 50% of a household income, does that kind of grate on you at all? I mean, is that too much of a personal question? I don't want to put you on the spot.
No. The part of my background used to be doing music as a sort of rock musician. And I did that for about 10 years. And obviously, I'm not a rock star. People probably don't know me from having seen me live ever. I'm hoping, because it'd be strange if people remembered me somehow from that to this name I'm using now. So I saw a lot of people when I was young, kind of coming up, and you do go through that, especially when you don't have as much perspective, where you just say like, "Oh, I can't believe that band is popular. Like, they're not good." And you know, and that was, you know, that would be kind of the thing. I opened for some pretty popular bands back in the 90s that people would have heard of, like Everclear, or you know, like sort of 90s modern rock stuff. And you look around a lot of the time, you're like, I don't understand why this is popular or why people like this. And then at some point, you just kind of have to let it go. And, you know, for better or worse, you know, kind of stay true to yourself, I guess. But yeah, I kind of got myself into a weird spot with podcasting, because I had, in my sort of brief story about how I ended up with a weird scripted show, is that I had a friend on tap to do a more traditional TV review show, and he bailed, and I did that. I was waiting for a few months to get started, and so the week I was getting ready to record my first episode, Scott Johnson and Tom Merritt co-announced their new podcast Autopilot, which was the exact same setup for the podcast I was originally going to do.
Oh wow.
So I kind of looked at myself and said, well, I don't know if I want to put this up the same week that, you know, these two, you know, megalith, you know, men of podcasting put up their new venture. So I just said, well, I'll just go back to being kind of goofy. And that's, you know, not that, I guess if you haven't heard what I do in my podcast, that may not make sense, but I've gotten so far away from a real review podcast. But basically, you know, it was kind of the same thing where I looked at somebody, I was like, oh, well, they're going to be more popular no matter what. And I'm kind of in the same boat. I don't think I want to put out my show about TV pilots the same week as Scott Johnson.
Right.
Because he's going to be like the most popular on iTunes and what's hot and, you know, and what's new and noteworthy, everything.
Yeah.
And then I will be there saying, oh, I'm also doing the exact same thing. And so, you know, I just looked at myself and said, well, you know, what can I do slightly differently? And, you know, to sort of address what you said, you know, look at it like, not to say, you know, whether Autopilot is good or bad, but, you know, look at it and say like, well, that's not what I'm going to do anymore. I'll just, you know, I have to do something that I like and kind of move forward with it.
Yeah. As long as you like what you're doing too. I mean, that's important. I mean, like I know that there's a lot of other shows that are similar to the Citadel Cafe, but the Citadel Cafe, notwithstanding the last few weeks where everybody's been so busy, but it's mostly just a reason for myself, Chad and Peyton, my two best friends, to just hang out and chat once a week. I mean, they're both married, they both have small children. We don't get to hang out nearly as much as we used to. Chad lives in another province. So, I mean, it's really just a quick way for us to hang out. And really, we just kind of talk about the same crap that we talk about if we were hanging out and having a beer. which makes it very easy to bring other people on the show, because it's really kind of like, what have you been doing in the last week that kind of falls into, you know, media consumption and errs on the side of, you know, geeky sci-fi fantasy stuff. So it can move forward, you know, easily, but I'd never, you know, put it out there thinking like, yes, this is meant to be marketed and, you know, get 100,000 listeners in the first year and all this kind of stuff, because I don't know that that's what I want for the show, you know. And I was quite happy to put out something that's just not so much an expression of myself, but just me and my boys having fun, you know. That's really what I wanted to get out of it. So that's cool because I like I do like the TV. Oh geez, I'm gonna blank on the name here. Copilot.
I'll try you out there.
Yeah, TV Copilot. Thanks for the rescue, John. Really, really appreciate that. Yeah, TV Copilot. And I will let you know that I have not yet listened to Autopilot. I have the intention.
Yeah, I plan on taking these guys down.
Yes, I was saying. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you having met them, and I mean, they know you, and you guys have kind of a social media rapport. There should have been an email in there, Johnny, that was just like, really, you guys need another show. Honestly, right now, this is what you're doing to me.
Scott, the day I heard it, because you know, I knew Scott a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, from sending him a bunch of junk for 2 years. And the day I heard it, I'm like, I'm really excited for you guys, and I'm kind of pissed off at the same time. So, like, I am literally about to launch a website and podcast, like, this week with the exact same premise as your new show. And, you know, I got this email back that was very, very kind and very friendly.
Yeah,
like,
course.
It wasn't my idea. It was Tom. I'm so sorry. Like, I didn't have ideas. You know, that is not what he said. But he's like, it was all Tom, I swear.
Yeah.
That's well, I will say, if you want to take them down, I know for sure that Tom's weakness is his beard. So go for the beard, preferably with fire.
Nice.
Yeah, I'll take them down with kindness. You know,
yeah. Oh, of course.
Great things to say about those guys, you know. And in kind of what got me back on track with not being kind of despondent about it, because it was a little bit frustrating. Because I look up to both of those guys and say, like, oh, I want to do the exact same thing, exactly the same thing you're doing. And then I had a friend said, you know, there's like, you know, 500,000 podcasts. Who cares? You know, just do whatever. It's like there's going to be other people out there that, you know, granted, a lot of people know me from the instance and from places they've heard like my bits. Since I'm refusing to sort of use my name as a brand that makes any sense. That people, you know, kind of come from different paths to find stuff you're doing. And on the internet, you know, you'll make your way if you stay around long enough.
Yeah.
Something fun that people like at all, you know, eventually you'll find it, you know, find a place.
Yeah. I was just listening to a Webcomics Workshop and they were addressing a very similar topic. And I mean, being a little bit late to webcomics, I mean, the guys that are the big pillars, you know, like Penny Arcade, PvP, Sheldon, Girls with Slingshots, some people that are having a huge following online, everybody now that's getting into webcomics are starting to see kind of an uptick in their popularity. It's a different model. It's a different world because there's webcomics everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them are animated, like some of them are, there's all kinds of things happening. And it's really kind of hard. You're like, well, I want to do a webcomic, but it's like, you know, you're throwing this pebble in this giant pond. And that's the same advice that I gave a lot of people that were coming up to me at HalCon and saying, like, you know, well, how have you become a successful web cartoonist? And I was like, I don't know. I'll tell you when it happens. but the thing that I always say is, like, look, just do what you like and draw what you know. If you're authentic with, you know, what you are going to put out there, you will find a following. I mean, like, I remember one of my co-hosts on the Dating Digital podcast was into knitting. And she listened to not one, but two or three podcasts about knitting. And I was like, there are knitting podcasts out there? And she was like, yes, and they're actually pretty entertaining. I was like, you're kidding me, really? And I was like, I mean, you might like to pick your toes. There's probably a podcast about it. So, you know, there's a little bit of something for everybody online. And I never want to ever, you know, discourage anybody. You know, if you have a new idea, even if it's the same idea that somebody else has had, I mean, like, just do it anyway. Because I get the same news from probably a couple different podcasts. And I'm okay with getting the news digested again because I tune in for the personalities. I tune in for the editorial, the opinions, you know. I really enjoy Leo Laporte on a lot of his shows, and he says the same thing over and over when you tune into different shows. But then his co-hosts change. And you're like, oh, well, I know what Leo thinks a bit about this, but I want to know what Sarah or, you know, Rene Ritchie, I think, from Montreal. He's had some really cool insight on MacBreak Weekly. So, like, there's all these different things that kind of fall into it. And you start to get to know people and their kind of opinions and value that over kind of, like, the facts that are coming over the airwaves at you on shows. Bill, I feel like I might have been not talking over you, but not handing the mic your way enough. Do you have anything to contribute as far as like New Media and New Media Expo?
New Media is cool. I like it. It's neat. actually, it's funny you mentioned that thing about autopilot because me and my wife, Anne Marie, kind of had the same thing happen because originally we were going to do a Doctor Who podcast. And then within like a couple weeks of us deciding to do it, Justin Robert Young and his quote unquote platonic friend, aka girlfriend, Ashley Paramore, decided to start doing a Doctor Who podcast. So we went over to Once Upon a Time. But it's hard. It's like, you know, if I, you know, when I went on to iTunes when we were thinking about doing the Once Upon a Time podcast, there were a lot of Once Upon a Time podcasts out there, but they weren't done by people I know and people that I know. So that was kind of a deciding factor. I was like, well, you know, just to get things up and going, I'm going to be relying a lot on my fellow chat realm members, my fellow NSFW fans. And I realized, you know, it was going to be just oversaturated if I decided to do it since he was already doing one, you know. But what you going to do? It's turned out really well. And, you know, even with the Once Upon a Time podcast, like me and I'm trying to remember his name. Him and his wife host the Once podcast, and there's a few others like AfterBuzz.
Daniel Lewis.
Yeah, Daniel Lewis. That's it. But you know, we've kind of formed a coalition of Once Upon a Time fans, and you know, when there's breaks and stuff, we'll do like an episode where we get all of us together and you know, dish out on theories and everything. So it's kind of fun to try and build up that community and the friendly competition there at the same time when we're covering the same space.
Nice. I mean, we kind of do the same thing here with Gamers In. Like I play video games. It's one of my favorite ways to spend time with Jocelyn, and I've always liked them, but I've never had as much opportunity to play them as I have, you know, since we've been dating. But there's not a lot of room for them on the Citadel Cafe because neither Chad nor Peyton have time or any interest in playing them. So there's always that little bit where it's like, I need to get Ryan or I need to be brought onto the Gamers In so I can get that video game stuff out, you know, and there always seems to be like that crossover time when you can, you know, expand and find people that are covering the same things. Like I know that, the Fanboys Extra Large podcasting network in the Eastern U.S., they were covering a lot of the same things that I was covering. So they asked me to come on their show. And it was neat because it was the same sort of idea, except for rather than just what they were watching and what they were consuming, they were also talking about like news about those shows. So like, you know, articles on like Entertainment Weekly and like new episodes, when the things are starting, who's being cast for what, that sort of stuff. And I thought that was really neat. Kind of exposure, you know, to that side of what I thought was a very similar show to ours and turns out to be, you know, very different in a lot of ways. So if I got one more point I wanted to pry about New Media Expo, and that is for someone like me, you know, going to any expo, whether it's a comic convention or a New Media Expo in Vegas, is a trip and a half. Yeah. I mean, it's a long flight from Halifax. I'm an hour in the time zone world. I'm an hour in the future from New York. So, I mean, flights to Vegas, granted it's a popular spot, I'm probably looking at better part of $700 return plus whatever the New Media ticket is. Is the expo expensive, Johnny? Like, I don't want to, you know, pry into your personal expenses or anything, but like, do you find it expensive for what you get out of it?
What percentage of your income did you spend?
To the tenth, actually.
I stayed just in the black gambling because we were in Vegas, so I was I didn't lose my house at the tables. Now, the New Media Expo in and of itself is not expensive so far as like if you do it last minute, it probably is expensive because it kind of like goes up exponentially, I think, in cost as the months go by. If you register early,
right?
I think I spent maybe $200 to register, which, you know, for attending a pseudo professional conference is not bad at all.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, hotels, depending on your comfort level, in Vegas, you know, we were there just, they kind of bookend it with CES. So you're there just before they jack up all the hotel rates. So that's not too bad.
Right.
And, You know, the expensive part is just paying attention and being in Vegas and not, you know, going crazy. But I would have to say for me, because, you know, I'm fortunate in being able to kind of go once or twice a year to do things where I can do networky activities and kind of meet people, because I didn't say this before, but like I live near Louisville, Kentucky. I'm not from this area originally, but it's not, you know, a big hub of new media, as
right.
people might be surprised to hear that.
I heard that was the new Silicon Valley.
Yeah, I think they call it the Silicon Hole. I don't know. casting aspersions on my locale aside, I don't really get to see people unless I travel. And there were so many cool people to run into there. Like I got to meet voice actors that, you know, I'm big fans of who do online content. I got to meet, you know, video producers and like sort of like whatever on air or, you know, like people you see on YouTube and kind of just, and like I was saying before, you get to meet people that, you know, make fun stuff, and it's hard to find people. And in an environment where, you know, everybody kind of doesn't know what they're doing, but kind of knows what they want to do. And everybody's kind of playing at this because it's not like a defined career for most people. Although, you know, there was a guy at a panel who asked the panel, you know, how do you get into new media so that you can pay your mortgage and put your kids through college? And, kind of, you know, I think everybody in the room kind of just, you know, their jaws just went slack, like you can't really say that. Like, it's not banking, you know. It's like it's not something you can go in where there's like expected incomes. But there are not many places you can go other than, like, you know, there are so many cons now that you can go to. There, you know, a lot of fan stuff where you can kind of meet people. But this was kind of a place where people who make things for all kinds of media get together and just kind of, you know, share ideas and get to see people in person, which is, I think, kind of invaluable whenever you're trying to, like, to do things. Like, you know, Joel, I met you at Nerdtacular.
Yeah.
I sort of knew Jocelyn a little bit online and had sort of met you online briefly before Salt Lake City. But, you know, I actually met you in person. So, mm-hmm. like, I have more of a connection. And I think, though, those kind of things, if you're podcasting or making a YouTube thing, just kind of as a thing that's fun to do, you know, for, I don't know, just a laugh every once in a while with your friends, and you only want to do it just to have a beer, and it's just something like you have a job that you love, and that's your main thing, but on the side, you kind of talk to your friends online, I, you know, probably don't go to New Media Expo.
Right.
But, you know, if it's something you want to do, like, long term, or if you're interested in, you know, new interesting things, you know, it's definitely... there are so many exciting things happening online. Like, you know, I'll talk about it later, but like my new favorite TV show just came out, and it's not a TV show, you know, technically speaking. It's, you know, on the Geek and Sundry Network.
Oh, and, cool.
You know, it's like, it's something that a few years ago just wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
You know, people didn't have TV shows that they just made and put on the internet in a way that people actually paid attention.
Right.
Yeah. Apart from old media kind of funding traditional TV people to try to make TV shows on the internet, now there's just people doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And, you know, from that perspective, it's totally worthwhile if you have the money, you know. I guess that's just if there's something you love, it's hard to say what justifies the cost necessarily. But
yeah.
I was lucky enough to have enough extra money, and that my wife let this be my 2013 trip to go do my moonlighting hobby, you know, professional trip.
Right.
So.
Right on. Because it sounds to me too, like if you happen to be a video professional, like, oh, I don't know, Bill, if you happen to be...
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, neither do I. if you happen to be an artist like I do, I mean, like I draw a comic strip, but I do, you know, toy design, graphic design. I do illustration for design. If there's anything out there that you feel like, you know, might be complemented by your day job or your skill sets. And I mean, going to New Media Expo and making contacts of all these people that are producers and podcasters and creators and stuff like that. I mean, they might be fantastic on the mic, but maybe they can't draw a stick man to save their life. You know, maybe they can't animate their bumpers for their podcast and stuff like that. I mean, you might be able to start making connections there. And since that sounds like it's a really, really cool thing to do. Speaking of, go ahead, Bill.
I was just going to say, yeah, exactly. I doubt I would have, been taken to Indonesia by Brian Brushwood to shoot Scam School or animated bumpers for Sword and Laser on Geek and Sundry if I hadn't met those guys in person a few times, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Because as far as they know, I'm just a weirdo on the internet.
Yeah. Now you're just a weirdo in person, right?
Exactly. Once they get to know me, they realize I'm just a weirdo, but a harmless weirdo. So.
Right. Well, they're the best kind. The best kind. Well, speaking of the next section, Johnny, I thought that we could roll into movies, TV, and video, which is generally where, you know, we all talk about what we've been watching or consuming in those forms in the last week or so. I have not been really watching or doing anything, so I'm going to defer to Bill and see what has been on his screen. Then you, Johnny, and then I do have one question that I'll pose to the two of you and our listeners at the end. So, Bill, what have you been watching?
Well, the thing that I've seen over the past month or so that left the biggest impression on me was Django Unchained, the new Tarantino flick.
Okay.
It was just a phenomenal experience. I think mainly the reason I liked it is because when I went to see it in the theater, the way the crowd reacted, I felt like I was watching a play.
Oh,
you
wow.
know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where you know, there were like cues where everyone in the crowd busted up laughing. Like there were audience responses that just came organically. And it was just a really interesting because you could kind of tell in the script that Tarantino very carefully crafted it for that kind of reaction. And, you know, catching on up with interviews with him after I saw it, that was definitely the case. But it was just... probably the most fun I've had in the theater, maybe since I even saw Kill Bill, you know, several years ago.
Oh, wow.
In the theater. But it really left a really strong impression on me. Did you guys see it?
I haven't. Johnson and I are pretty selective with what we go to see in the theater. We generally have kind of a time constraint with her doing shift work, so we don't always get an opportunity to go. But also... we've found that a lot of big movie experiences have kind of left us lacking lately. Mm. So we've kind of been deferring to friends and people that we know enjoy the same sort of thing. I will confess to not being a Tarantino fan. I don't blacklist him. I don't blacklist him. But every single time I've said, you know what? Everybody raves about this. I'm just going to go and see it. And I come home hating it. And I'm just like, I don't know what it is. I just, maybe the guy just doesn't speak to me. But I do always take everything that's out there by him that's, you know, met with a lot of really rave reviews by my friends and other, you know, geeky people I respect online. I always kind of say, well, you know, I should probably, if the opportunity arises, I will probably go see it. But his films are not usually things that I'm in line to see the first week they come out.
Oh. Understood, you know, different strokes for different folks, but this podcast is over. I'm leaving. No, but I will say, even if you don't like Tarantino, you might want to see it just because I think it's Samuel L. Jackson's and Leonardo DiCaprio's. I think it's my favorite performance from both of them ever.
Okay.
Wow. They just...
I like Sam Jackson.
They very much slip into their roles and are transformed by them, and it's just... really fascinating to see. And I mean, DiCaprio even, he had a lot of input on the script. Like there's I won't spoil anything, but there's a speech about a sort of racist scientific method that was popular back then that he brought to Tarantino and said, I want to do a monologue about this. You know, so he was very involved. So if you like DiCaprio, check it out.
Mm.
Well, I am a big Leo DiCaprio fan. You know, I rushed to the theater for all of his works.
He's just so dreamy, you know?
Yeah, well, I think I might be riding on the back of Johnny's sarcasm on DiCaprio, too. I like Sam Jackson, though. I really enjoy his stuff.
Yeah, Sam Jackson was really, really, really good.
Cool. What's the basic plot synopsis? Like, I mean, I know nothing.
Okay. Well, basically, Jamie Foxx, who actually didn't have a very strong performance, even though he's the title character, He's a slave being moved from one plantation to another, and this dentist shows up offering to buy him, and I won't spoil what happens, but eventually he gets Django, which is Jamie Foxx's character's name, and says, you know, if you help me, because Django knows what these two kind of outlaws look like because they worked at his old plantation. So the dentist is actually a bounty hunter, and he says, you know, if you come work for me, identify these guys, I'll take you up north and give you your freedom. You know, that goes pretty successfully, and so they end up forming a long-term partnership and eventually going to rescue Django's wife. Hmm. And I'll leave it at that as far as, because, you know, anything else would be spoiler territory, but that's the basic premise.
Is it based on a true story at all?
No, not at all.
So, and is it like kind of classic Tarantino over the top stuff, or is it more of a period piece?
I would say both. It's very over the top, but at the same time, you can totally see people in that era being like that, especially like there's been a lot of controversy because I think there's 150 uses of the N-word.
Okay.
But I mean, that would be pretty commonplace back then, so you really can't fault it. So it is a little over the top, and there are some pretty violent scenes in it, but overall, it just takes you on a roller coaster of emotion. You're excited, then you're depressed, then you're like, I was crying at points, I was laughing at points. It was just,
yeah.
Overall, yeah. I am still getting a little verklempt.
It sounds like it's not an uneducated movie. Like, it just obviously there was a lot of research and a lot of heart is the word I'm looking for. A lot of heart put behind it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of flavor from that time period brought into, like, the Mandingo fighting, which is basically where they would pit two slaves against each other in a fight to the death, features pretty prominently. Like, jeez. I said, that speech from Tarantino. And I guess there are some historical inaccuracies, too. Like, a dynamite comes into play at a couple points in the movie, and I guess the type of dynamite they were using wasn't accurate to the time period, and a couple of the guns weren't completely accurate, but...
Right.
It may not be, you know, an exact, you couldn't put the script into a history textbook, but it got the feeling right.
Right. So.
It cool. felt like definitely. Roots if Roots didn't have to worry about being on at 8 p.m.
Yeah. Nice.
I think after Inglourious Basterds, I think the last thing people are expecting from Tarantino is historically accurate.
What are you talking about? Hitler was gunned down by a machine gun. You didn't know that?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I guess I forgot.
Rewriting history right here on the Citadel Cafe. Johnny, what about you? Anything happening on the big screen or the little screen?
Let's see. I missed The Hobbit. I still have not made it to see The Hobbit, and I guess now it's probably looking like I'm going to have to wait. That was the only thing I was really excited about. I don't have a person to go see Django Unchained with, so I've been trying to look for an opportunity. Maybe this weekend I'll go by myself. Sometimes trying to find people to go see Tarantino movies is a little bit tricky. I haven't been to the theater since I think I saw Wreck-It Ralph 3 times in 2 weeks.
Nice. for great movie.
For various reasons. That was my last movie binge, and it was the same movie I saw a bunch of times. So.
Right on. Anything on the smaller screen?
Yeah, I do want to say, like, just because I sort of mentioned this a little bit ago, but everybody has to watch Learning Town. It is the greatest thing ever. They've been teasing it a little bit. It's the Paul and Storm new series on YouTube on the Geek and Sundry. It is, you know, the basic premise is that Paul and Storm are going to be guests on this, you know, kids show, Learning Town. And right before they appear on the show, the host of the show dies. And then they're approached about sort of taking over the show. And if you're familiar at all with Paul and Storm, it's very much kind of in their line of humor, a lot of it. There's a Meatloaf parody video in the middle. It goes all over the place, and it's all kinds of stuff I love. I mean, I don't know how many people remember this, but like I was a huge fan of like when Weird Al had a kids show.
Oh, the Weird Al show. I love that show.
And so there's like, that's kind of in my wheelhouse as a fan. I mean, and I, you know, like not that I'm doing the same thing, but like I do a podcast that's basically a fake review show about TV shows. So I kind of like that sort of extra level and where you get the kind of like the Gary Shandling kind of effect where you're sort of looking at people doing stuff in the sense that like you're kind of watching them living in a world, but making the world they're living in at the same time. And it's Learning Time is so funny. It's going to, and it's amazingly well done too. Like it's so polished. I was kind of surprised at, you know, how much it really does, to go back to that TV show analogy about, you know, new things online, but there's really nothing that distinguishes Learning Town from like what you would see on like maybe more like Adult Swim, you know, something like Children's Hospital. But, you know, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And it's so funny.
Nice. I'm excited. Both Jocelyn and I are big Pollen Storm fans. And I feel like I've been name dropping this whole episode. I promise I'm going to stop. And next week I'll go back to being a lonely podcaster. But Pollen Storm were musical guests at HalCon here in Halifax in October. On the Citadel Cafe episode, somewhere in and around October, you can find out how, you know, I rehashed the whole story about meeting them and hanging out with them and eventually going out to dinner with them. At that dinner, they got the go-ahead. The email came in at the dinner that they were then allowed to talk about Learning Town.
Oh, wow.
So they were talking about their flights and whether or not an incoming storm was going to mess with their schedule. And we were like, oh, well, where are you going? Like, what's next on the, you know, where are you going? You're playing at a university somewhere? Like, what's happening? And they're like, oh, actually, we're flying to LA to, and they kind of look at one another like, did we get the email today? Yeah, we got the email today. We can tell them that. Yeah, okay. And then they turn back to us and they fill us in about what Learning Town is. And Jocelyn and I are just like, that's amazing. Like, I can't wait to see that, you know? So I'm happy to hear that the first episode is out. I'm going to have to go bookmark that on Geek and Sundry because Jocelyn and I are going to want to check that out.
Yeah, I kind of paid it half attention today because I had it up on the other monitor while I was working. I want to sit down and, you know, actually watch the episode. But what I caught of it was awesome.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, we at the dinner, the only thing I remember is Paul and Storm and puppets. And my mind just kind of went.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I'm in.
Yeah, there's great stuff in there because they've got like Mike Furman from Hard and Firm. Mm-hmm. Is in there. I think he's going to be in there pretty consistently, you know, Chris Hardwick, Hard and Firm. And yeah, there's all kinds of people that, like, if you're sort of on the periphery of things like Geek and Sundry and watching people do stuff online, like many of those people are involved with Learning Town. It's you know, it's going to be the greatest.
Cool. I am stoked. Anything else, Bill, do you have anything to mention, or can I get into my little riff?
You know what? I was going to go into a big thing, but I think I'll let you go.
Okay.
You sound like you're passionate about your topic. So.
I am, and it's because I found it so freaking frustrating. I know that iTunes U exists. I haven't had much time to consume larger amounts of video, so I've been taking in small bits. One of my favorites lately, I've been learning how to paint digitally via controlpaint.com. I've mentioned them on the show before, but they're little, you know, 5-10 minute lecture videos that have like an assignment or something to do. And I like it. I mean, I don't feel like I'm really wasting time, you know, when I'm doing stuff like that. And I'd even be okay with a slightly longer thing, like, you know, 20, 30 minutes, a lecture on iTunes U about something, maybe like CSS coding or design or anything that I could just kind of, you know, draw in my sketchbook and kind of consume and not really feel like I'm just watching, you know, American Housewives Part 7. We don't have cable anyway, but you know what I mean? Like, I mean, at some point, even the stuff that's on Netflix gets kind of old. So I wanted to ask you guys, is there anything on iTunes U or similar that you would recommend?
Well, I should have looked this up ahead of time because my professional profession revolves around computer programming. So this, I got into MIT iTunes stuff. They've got tons of content and it covers, they have a lot of their content. MIT's curriculum is online kind of for the picking already. And they've got a lot of really cool stuff on iTunes U. I don't know, I'm sure if you search for MIT, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty easy to find. There's not a, I don't think there's another well-known MIT that will obfuscate the search, but they have a lot of really neat stuff, and even stuff that, that covers, you know, just kind of like general science, and it's very ecology. But, and there, and the other thing is, and I guess this is, now that I think about it, it's actually like iPhone programming, but there's a pretty awesome iPhone programming course, I think through Stanford on iTunes U, but that's pretty specific.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, not to say that I wouldn't be interested in doing some iPhone programming or something, because I mean, you see all these games and stuff online, and much like you were saying earlier about, you see this band that you're opening for, and you're like, wow, they're really not very good. And I might see something like, I don't know, like an iPhone game or something. And even though the game is good, I might look at this stuff like, well, they didn't hire the right artist for this. And I keep on thinking like, man, it would be really cool to be able to get into something like that and be able to work in iTunes or program for iOS and just to kind of, not so much as to make a product to sell, but just to kind of have a portfolio to say, hey, by the way, I know you read my comic. I know that, you know, you see me draw cartoons and stuff at conventions, but I also happen to toy around with and know my way around working with iOS developers. So if you happen to be one and you'd like to work with me, then let me know. So it's just stuff like that that I'm trying to kind of like, I don't want to say like not work more or make more work for myself, but try to just kind of relax smarter, if that makes any sense. Because I enjoy this stuff. Like I like, you know, learning about that kind of stuff. And I just I was frustrated. I was looking on iTunes U for drawing content. I was looking for like, mm-hmm. you know, maybe there's something like a how to digitally paint series or something like that. And I was really kind of disappointed with what I found. There really wasn't a whole lot. And what I did find really felt like kind of old school stuff. And I am not going out to buy, you know, $200 worth of oil paints and canvas and brushes and stuff like that just to try to learn. I mean, I have all the digital tools here, and I know that there's ways to go about it. So I'm just trying to sort that stuff out. So MIT sounds like a good place to start. Thanks.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing about iTunes, and I haven't looked at the iTunes U that much in the new iTunes 11, but, you know, as much as they've buried podcasting in iTunes, iTunes U is really hard to find if you don't know it's there, which is kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, I was looking on the iPad. Their search sucks because it basically just searches by title. Like, it doesn't really go by content or tags. It just, like, whatever the lesson plans or the series happens to be called is what comes up. Mm-hmm. So I'll have to. The other one that I did find that I'm looking forward to at least take a look at is one on Photoshop, and it's kind of like all the bells and whistles of Photoshop. Like, I mean, I know how to use Photoshop to do what I need to, but I know there's lots of things that it does that I have no idea about, and I might be able to then utilize that. Maybe not so much for my comics, but I might be able to offer something to a client or save myself some time, you know, in the future. For that kind of
you
stuff.
Know what else is really good for the Adobe stuff? It's not free, but it's really good. Is lynda.com. The tutorials on there are awesome. I actually just transitioned to CS6 this past week, and I went ahead and got a subscription and have been going through their CS6 tutorials, and it gets you right up to speed.
Oh, cool. All right. Thanks, man.
It costs a little bit, but...
Well, I mean, sometimes... I mean, there's also... I mean, I can see... I find these free webinars from CG Masterworks and the related, I guess, organizing bodies around that. It's like a free webinar with one of their instructors. I mean, the instructor takes an hour, talks about their work history. The last 20 minutes or so, there's usually like a live drawing or live sketching session as the artist talks about what they're doing and some techniques and things that they've learned and tricks and stuff. And then you can go, you know, of course, download this later. You can ask questions live during the webinar, but you can also then view their course and their course outline on CG Masterworks. And the courses are similar to university pricing. You know, it's $400, $500, limited seating of something like, you know, 20 or so students or 15 students per session per term. Because, yeah. I mean, these guys all work at, you know, either ILM or Disney or somewhere. They have their own lives to then do, and then they do this kind of stuff like teaching a night course. And that's not dissimilar to me, like walking into the local college and taking a night course, except for I know who these people are, you know, like this is the guy that did the character design for How to Train Your Dragon. Yeah. You know what? I might want to take a class from that guy, you know, like that kind of accessibility is cool. I just don't happen to have the $400 to $600 right now to take something like that. But I'm open to kind of like, you know, everything up from free all the way up to, you know, the expensive, and I can just kind of like weigh where it is that I want to land. Cause I'm pretty sure, I mean, I'd have to ask my accountant, but I'm pretty sure like educational stuff, and new media consumption is something like for not new media, but like online learning stuff is something that I may be able to claim at least part of as part of a business expense.
Yeah. Well, if it's training for your job, I mean, I'm sure I haven't personally written any of that kind of stuff off, but I am sure you could.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll have to look into it. But speaking of some new stuff that I am excited about, I, for once, actually have a reading pick. A lot of times I talk about audio books and stuff like that, and this time I actually have something that I read, which I'm happy to point out. But I was blown away by Bottom of the Ninth, which is an animated graphic novel by Ryan Woodward. He is a effects animator. He worked with DreamWorks and a bunch of other stuff. He worked on Iron Giant. He's a very, very talented animator. He has a really beautiful short video on Vimeo of a pair of dancers that just mesmerized me a year or so ago. It might have even been a pick here on the Citadel Cafe. This Bottom of the Ninth iPad app and graphic novel is the first real success that I've seen of music, audio, dialogue, animation, and a comic all wrapped up into one.
That is a very bold claim, sir.
I've seen motion comics and I hate them.
Yeah.
I think they're awful.
They're not comics.
No, they're not comics and they're not animation and there's like bad lip sync and everything's morphed in After Effects or something and it looks horrendous. Yeah. And what the team behind Bottom of the Ninth, which I mean, led by Ryan Woodward, because his stuff is just all over this. It's like a signature, the whole thing. It animates when it needs to. It doesn't when it doesn't need to. You have the option to tap and listen to dialogue and speech balloons, but you don't have to do that. The dialogue that's read by an actor or part of the team. I mean, they're not Hollywood actors, but it's still good. They're still voice acting. It's still impassioned. And they don't say verbatim what's in the speech balloon. So you actually get more content than is there visually, which I thought was really interesting. Hmm. As you're reading, you're instructed to have headphones in because there's background music. There's a radio in the background. There's like announcers. The whole thing, of course, centers around a futuristic baseball game. Bottom of the Ninth being the hint there. But then the other things that are really important, like the first pitch of the main character, is full-on animated, just like you'd see in a Disney movie, with the exception of being a little stylized, you know, to fit the art direction of the comic. But then after that panel plays, the next two panels change and play at the same time. So you kind of have like what's happening first, and you see a prep for what's happening second, so it prepares your eye to move forward, and then like 1, 2, 3, all those panels animated at the same time, and I mean, it was really, really an enjoyable experience. Now, I got it for free when it was on special around Christmas time, kind of as a loss leader. They're trying to get people into the series. It was the prologue. I don't know if it's short or if it's going to be, if they're all the things are going to be that length. It's $3.99. And granted, it's amazing. I don't know if it's $3.99 good. You know, like everybody is so used to paying, you know, 99 cents for apps or, you know, maybe $1.99, $2.99 for high-end, or not high-end, but for, you know, the average kind of game/app on an iPad. I know Comixology, most books are between 99 cents and $2.99. So to ask for $3.99 and give, you know, I think it was maybe 14 pages, like it really wasn't very long, seems like a lot to me on a consumer side, but on the flip, as an artist, as an animator, as a, you know, a comic person, both fan and creator, it was incredible. And I kind of feel like it would be, I want to support them. Like, I want to give them the $4 and say, yeah, like, that is a lot of damn work. Like, it is crazy the amount of work that went into it. You know, it was a really fun experience. The only downside that I would say is that the graphic design, the layout, was a little cluttered, and it became really hard to figure out where we're gonna go. What works? What's a button? What, you know, is interactive and what is not? So that took a little bit to get used to. But beyond that kind of little blip, I think it was really good. Have either one of you seen it?
I have not. It actually does sound fairly interesting. One thing that always bugs me about motion comics is that they don't really, it's basically, you know, just controlling the way you view it. Where you know, with a comic book, you're controlling how you view it. You're controlling how time passes and everything. But it sounds like they've kind of worked around that and enhanced it. What with the multiple panels doing different things and everything. It sounds interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. At least I've got the link here to the website in the show notes, and they give you some examples. Like, they show you a sample page and some of the animations that you might see. And I really think that it's worth at least taking a look at the website and getting a taste for it. And if it's something that you might want to drop $4 on, then, you know, I'd be curious to see if the next issue is going to be bigger and if it's going to be the same price. So
that sounds really cool.
Yeah.
I'm taking a look at the website. It does look pretty neat.
Oh, and he's sick talented. Like, he's a beautiful animator. So there's a lot of kind of like fanboy in me happening right now. So, I don't know if I have an even keel on this or kind of a biased opinion, but, I just received word, in my left ear, that our right-hand man, Johnny Feisty, has got to bail because we've been running a little bit long. I had originally slated everybody for, you know, X amount of time this evening, and apparently vomit is happening. When you have young kids and you're looking after them, then these things come up. So, Johnny, man, thanks for coming on the show.
No, it was great. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, we'll have to have you back sometime. Quickly before you go vomit hunting, where can people find your work online? I know you're on Twitter as Johnny Feisty, but like your website and your podcast and stuff.
Yeah, the easiest way, if people for some reason want to see me spout off random phrases about whatever happens in my head at any given moment, on Twitter at Johnny Feisty. I'm on Twitter pretty actively. TVCopilot.com is my podcast website, and I do have a JohnnyFeisty.com, and I'm getting ready to revamp it a little bit to kind of bring in a couple of new things, and I'm starting a couple projects that are somewhat unofficial, but going to be doing some kind of fun new media things shortly. So,
cool.
Yeah, that's pretty much summing it up, I think, for me online at this point anyway.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on the show, man. And I'll be sure to have links to all that kind of stuff in the show notes on our site when the show goes up.
Cool. Fantastic. Thanks, Joel.
Cheers, man.
It was nice talking to you, John.
To you, Bill.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
Yeah. So, Bill, sorry about that. I had this warning. I was like, oh no, I have to address this immediately. Kids don't wait.
No, they don't. As a father of three, I completely understand that.
Both of you guys have got three kids each. Wow.
I know, like, tons of kids.
Tons. That's like a half dozen and kids between the two of you.
Yeah, those are just the ones I know about too. There could be dozens of others out there.
Nice. Very, very cool. Do you have to leave as well, sir, or are you good to hang out for a little bit longer?
I can hang out for a little bit longer, maybe another 15 minutes or so.
Okay, cool. Well, why don't we just talk about whatever you've been reading this week, and then we will wrap it up.
Okay. Well, this week I read, and I don't know if you're keeping current or not, but I read the new reboot of Spider-Man, Superior Spider-Man.
Oh, cool.
Have you been keeping up on that at all?
I know that Mr. Parker did not do well.
No, I know
a little bit. That was like Spider-Man 700, right?
Yeah.
So I have to confess that I'm into comic strips, not so much comic books. So I know the pop culture isms in the news, but I don't necessarily know what happened and what issue and when. So is Superior Spider-Man good? Is it a good move?
I think it is. There's a lot of people who don't and are freaking out about it, but I think those are people who have a very short-term memory when it comes to how comic books work.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we can outright say it because, I mean, it was in USA Today. Peter Parker died.
Yeah.
But, you know, that doesn't mean that he's going to be dead for even a week or two.
No, you know, and that's the thing that I always found so funny about peril in comic books is like Superman died too, but he's back.
Well, see, when Superman died, he was one of the first big characters like that to really die, so it felt permanent.
Mm-hmm.
But then they went and did Batman, and then 40 X-Men died and came back, and Captain America, and now it's just kind of, you expect, you know, for them to be out for about a year, maybe a little longer, maybe a little shorter, and then they'll be back, because there's going to be a new movie or cartoon coming out that they have to market.
Yeah. Do you find that Marvel is particularly bad for this?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, the reason I was comfortable giving that spoiler is because anytime they have any sort of quote-unquote event like this, every media outlet has it the day before the comic comes out because Marvel sends it to them and says, publish it on this date so we can get people in the shops. So it's all just marketing stunts. But I will say that with Spider-Man, it was a little different because this was a storyline that was built up since I don't know if you remember the Brand New Day thing that happened a few years ago where they canceled out Peter and Mary Jane's marriage and kind of reset the status quo.
I didn't read it, but I do remember the event.
Yeah, but you know, from then on, a guy named Dan Slott has been writing the books, and he's kind of been building to this since maybe a couple months into his run. Basically, it's been a constant battle. Like Dr. Octopus, Dr. Otto Octavius, is dying, and he's trying to, you know, win one before he goes out because he's notoriously never wins one.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's several big arcs like Ends of the Earth and a couple other ones in there throughout the past few years, where Doc Ock and Spider-Man have been butting heads, and Doc Ock almost wins, and then Spider-Man finally beats them. But you know, kind of all building up to this, where Doc Ock switches minds, which is a very comic booky kind of plot,
mm-hmm.
with Peter Parker, and so Peter Parker's in Doc Ock's dying body, almost dead body, and eventually he dies, leaving Doc Ock in Peter Parker's body scot-free.
Oh.
So now...
now that's a twist. I was expecting just Spider-Man to get his ass kicked. Like, I was thinking, I was seeing a much smaller or simpler plot.
Mm. No, he got his ass kicked. Okay. But, yeah, it was very interesting, and, you know, it was all about, you know, Dr. Octopus finally getting one over on Spider-Man until the very end. And because of the nature of their mind link, Peter was kind of able to project into Doc's... Well, Doc already had all of Peter's memories and everything, but he was able to kind of get Doc Ock to actually live through his life and see why he became who he was and why he makes the decisions he did. And so, you know, once Peter dies... After having basically experienced all of that, Dr. Octopus decides to, you know, honor Peter's memory, be a hero, but do it a lot better than Peter ever did.
Hmm.
Because he's Doc Ock and he's all ego. So
wow.
He knows he can do it better than Peter did. And wow. That's kind of the setup for Superior Spider-Man.
Oh, right on. That actually sounds interesting to me. Because one of the problems I have with reading comics, trades and stuff, not so much trades, but like monthlies and stuff, is that I keep on wanting to get into them. And I tried the new 52 when they came out. I was reading Superman, Justice League, and one of the Batman titles. I don't remember which one. And I got 2 issues into Batman. I think I got 3 issues into Justice League and only 1 or 2 into Superman. I was like, yeah, this is just as corny as it ever has ever been. And I just couldn't do it. And I don't know why, because when I was like 14 and 15, which is old enough to be aware of corny, like I was really into Image Comics. I was reading a lot of like Cyber Force and Strike Force and Stormwatch and all these kind of like big, like kind of sci-fi team comic, you know, superhero things. And yeah. I mean, I'm sure they're just as cheesy. I don't know. I don't remember when the cheese button went off in my brain. But I like, I have, someone, I think it was All-Star Superman or something. Somebody told me that I had to pick it up and read it. And I mean, some of it was pretty good, but like the moment that Superman's dog flies into the thing, I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'm done. Like, I don't,
I love Crypto.
Yeah. Well, Crypto's got his space, but it's not really in, you know, in a when you want a hardcore kind of a Superman comic. Like, it's fun in a Warner Brothers animated video, but I don't really,
yeah.
I don't see, especially when he's saving the day. I mean, I can, it's a fun thing to piss Lois off, but I don't necessarily need Krypto, you know, saving Superman because he's man's best friend or Superman's best friend. That kind of stuff I'm a little bit, you know, I draw the line on. And it's funny because, like, I realize I'm talking about a guy that flies around in a cape and tights, but, you know, like, there's this funny kind of, like, suspension of disbelief, and I have this precipice that once you push me over it, I'm done. Like, I just you I will not forgive you once I go, once you go there. I talked about this earlier this year when the Superman trailer came out for Man of Steel, is that I like the old-fashioned Superman. You don't need to be crazy sci-fi for me with this. Like, I mean, I Robin Banks and Lex Luthor taking over the world and Superman stopping them is really kind of all I need. So to hear that plot in Superior Spider-Man, I understand the brain switching is still a bit of a twist and kind of a, not a comic trope, but you know, it requires some leap of faith, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it at least then has an interesting outcome, you know, as opposed to just what I had assumed was what happened was that he just dies and they just give the Spider-Man costume to somebody else, like his son that no one knows about or something. You know, and it goes on from there. So yeah, that actually sounds like something I would read.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where the buildup was so good that I'm definitely in for the story. I do have to admit though that I've always been a bit into the cheesy. Like, okay. I have huge stacks in the bookcase behind me of old 50s and 60s Superman comics, like the or what are they called? The DC Universe Presents editions.
Oh, yeah. The Action
Comics. It's all
printed
on newsprint. Yeah. And I've always loved all those elements, like, you know, the Bottle City of Kandor and, you know, the Phantom Zone, Red Kryptonite, all that kind of stuff. But that's just me. I just kind of like this might be a fake word, the imaginativeness of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It just kind of... It kind of opens it up, you know, when it's done well, when that cheesiness is done well, it just kind of provides a staging area for a morality tale or more of a mythological tale. I expect, like, All-Star Superman, that's disappointing to hear you put that down, because that actually, I think that stands as probably the best overall, if you get through the whole series, it stands as probably the best overall interpretation of Superman I think I've ever seen. And I'm a huge fan of Superman. I have a tattoo that I planned on getting from the time I was 8 years old.
Wow.
So, you know, lifelong huge fan.
Yeah, I did read it. I read it as a trade. Like, I'm pretty sure I read the whole thing, because there's only like 14 issues in the whole roll, right?
Yeah.
So, because we're talking about All-Star Superman, not Superman All-Stars.
I don't think there is a Superman All-Stars. I heard Scott say that on the morning stream the other day.
So that's backwards then. Okay. Because that might be where I heard it too. Like, I just, it's in the back of my head. But it's, I read it the once and I haven't been back, just because it's on the shelf though.
Yeah. Have you watched the animated movie?
Yes. I've seen, I saw both. Or I've read the comic and I've seen the movie. Some of those animated movies I find, I'll either take or leave. Like, I'll enjoy them, but some of them are better than others. Jocelyn and I watched the Dark Knight Returns one.
Yeah.
And it took me a little while to get used to, oh God, is it Peter Sellers?
Mm-hmm.
That's the voice of Batman.
Yeah.
And I was not really familiar with the comic work and stuff like that. And it took me kind of a bit to get into it, but it was gritty. It was interesting. They changed the animation style with every movie, which is good. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily want to poo-poo that, but it then makes it hard to find a home. Like, you don't, when you watch Superman, the animated series, or Batman, the animated series, you know what you're expecting with each episode. You're going to get this noir kind of art deco thing, or it's going to be very futuristic in Superman, but he's like the big guy with the square chin and the Boy Scout and all this kind of stuff. And I find, like, when they constantly are switching voice actors and design specs and stuff like that, it can get a little bit, it takes you longer to get into the movie than you normally would if it was like the fourth movie in a series where everybody kind of looks the same and has the same kind of tenor to them. And again, I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, because it's cool to see new looks and new artists have new takes on Batman and stuff like that. And I thought it was brutal. Like, it was really, it was really was visceral, I guess, is the word that I'm looking for. And I liked that, and I was not expecting it to be be that gutsy, I guess.
They push the PG-13 they slap on those pretty hard.
They do, but, yeah.
But it's good, and I mean, you know, if all these movies were sharing a universe, I would probably have the same issue you have. But you know, as far as a unified animated DC universe, I had JLU, Justice League
Ultimate and, or something.
I forget what the U stood for. Unlimited, maybe.
Unlimited, you're right.
Yeah, and, you know, Batman the Animated Series, Superman the Animated Series, Batman Beyond, that whole cohesive universe. And that was really good, and that was really quality. If they can come out with something, a unified set of movies that are all in the same universe of that quality, I'd be more than happy to watch it. Otherwise, I'm happy getting all these one-off kind of really good Elseworld movies.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. I'll agree with you there. Well, I think that probably is a good place to wrap up this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record every Wednesday night live at 7:30 Eastern on starcrossedonline.com/live. Music for the show is composed by Kevin McLeod, and you can, of course, find the podcast on iTunes and our website for downloading later. To contact the show, hit us up at thecitadelcafe @gmail.com. The same goes for Twitter, Facebook, and Google+. You can also send us an iTunes review if you'd like to do that. It's a great way for the show to reach new listeners. If you do so, we will, of course, read your plug right here on the show, and thank you. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find my comic and pretty much all that I'm up to at starcrossedonline.com. Bill, where can people find your stuff online?
Well, on Twitter, I'm at Bill Meeks. You can catch, you know, all the random projects I do at meeksmixedmedia.com, and you can listen to my Once Upon a Time podcast at greetingsfromstorybrook.com, and that's available in iTunes and, you know, Zune Marketplace and all that kind of stuff too. So
awesome. And if you happen to miss it, you can find Johnny at Johnny Feisty on Twitter, and tvcopilot.com is the source of his podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.